Hey, Mayo, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Not bad. We have a lot to get to this week. A lot of stuff looking forward to possible Apple events, or maybe just one Apple event next month. Starting with our favorite source, DigiTimes, the often sort of close, but not always on the nose source, DigiTimes. Talking about MacBook rumors, AirPower, and iPad stuff. So tell me about the DigiTimes report, Mayo.
Yeah, I mean, DigiTimes has a infamously checkered history of accuracy. As always, they're obviously on the supply chain side of things, and as you get closer to the event that is as yet unannounced, obviously the supply chain starts filling up with stuff, so it's not a completely ridiculous proposition. Also, unlike a lot of other DigiTimes stories, this one's pretty precise in what it says, so that tends to give it more credence than, you know, some like airy-fairy stuff. On the MacBook, what DigiTimes says is that, quote, Apple will launch an entry-level $1,200 MacBook that uses Kaby Lake chips in September. Mm-hmm. Now, repeatedly earlier in the year, DigiTimes referred to a, quote, 13-inch Retina MacBook Air. I think it's interesting that this latest report does not specify, like, does not use the same terminology. I mean, other sources have indicated that there is a new MacBook something that's about 13 inches coming along with a higher resolution screen, because realistically you can't exactly go lower resolution than what the current MacBook Air is. But I always think it's like important to note when a publication kind of changes their tack on something, because it kind of suggests that something's changed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny that they call a $1,200 MacBook entry level, because to date, like, I think you'd call the entry level computer the $999 one, which currently is the 13-inch MacBook Air. And yeah, if they just dropped the $999 price and went to $1,200 as the base, then they're not exactly being entry-level. They're actually going up market. Again, pricing is definitely not the DigiTimes forte. The most juicy part of this is that it's DigiTimes says that Apple wanted to release this product at the end of 2017 featuring 10-nanometer Intel chips.
Mm-hmm.
The Intel chip timeline continues to be very delayed and having troubles, and the current estimates are that 10 nanometer from Intel won't be available till middle of next year. And it seems what Apple have done in response is re-engineer the product that was supposed to come out in late 2017, and over the course of 2018 have switched it up to run off of the 14 nanometer Kaby Lake chips, which is might explain the delay and give some mitigation for the, you know, the massive weight and dearth of updates to the product.
Yeah, so what a pain on that standpoint, because, I mean, even if 10 nanometers available next year, it might not be in next year's version of this computer, so you can't just be like, wait until next year's version of this unreleased computer at this point. It could be even later on. On the pricing point, it's like, before the 13-inch MacBook was the only oldest thing sticking around at that $1,000 price point, there was the 11-inch version of the MacBook Air, and was that like $800?
Yeah, it was $799.
Yeah, so Apple just gave up that like super, you know, entry level for a Mac computer at least, over a Mac notebook, and you know the 12-inch MacBook, right, in the MacBook was kind of like, you know, if you want something in that size, it's not the price that replaces it, certainly at $1,300, you know, but at least in the portability side, it's as portable, if not more. And then the 12-inch is also, you know, Retina versus the 11-inch with giant bezels and super low resolution. Like that 11-inch MacBook Air stands out as like a real oddity in the current generation of computers, because it was so, the screen, like, you had some width to it, but there was almost no height to it at all. Like it was crazy.
And macOS really likes having some height to it, just because the dock takes up, you know, 10%, 15% of the screen real estate in vertically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was not a very forgiving, like, even the menu bar was not forgiving on that computer. Although, like, if you wanted the portability, then it was, you know, something all on its own for that price point. Okay, another entry in the mystery MacBook space from this time from DigiTimes, saying $1,200. They historically do have to eventually, like old computers go down market they eventually get cheaper than when they were first introduced. Like, we have the same problem right now with the MacBook Pro line, where it costs more to buy a MacBook Pro today than it did a few years ago, just because they haven't lowered the price yet of new models, like three generations in. That was the big complaint with the MacBook Pro in 2016, and they've not yet kind of corrected that.
They adjusted some of the prices on the 13 inches.
Yeah, but yes, so it's like they eventually have to make that jump where it's like painful for a few years. You know, like you do, maybe you do lose at that $1,000 computer, and that it is, you know, $200 more to buy a Mac notebook. But the changes would be worth it, like a modern 13-inch MacBook Air-like computer that is, you know, maybe wedge-shaped, not like the non-Touch Bar Pro, make different choices than the non-Touch Bar Pro, but for $200 more, you know.
And it's, like, Windows, like, you can look at the Windows world and see products that are vastly superior to the MacBook Air that are, you know, $1,000, if not cheaper. Like,
sure, yeah.
I think they can do a Retina 13-inch thin computer and not have to put the price up. I think you look at, like, the iPad entry level, the 329 iPad, and you're getting, you know, a far higher resolution display, you know, good performance, strong storage. You can add a keyboard for, like, not much more. And all that comes in a package that's, what, like, $329?
Yeah.
If you added, let's say, ARM's cheaper to manufacture than Intel chips, if you add $100 on for that, if you add, you know, $100 on for the fact that it will have, like, a second part of the chassis, like an actual integrated keyboard, and then, you know, $100 on just for the... Just to give it a comparable estimate, you're still, like, at the $600 range for the actual price. Like, there's still massive wiggle room between that and the $1,000 mark. Like, the reason the MacBook Air is still $1,000 isn't because it's expensive to manufacture or anything. It's just when it was first introduced, they introduced it at $1,000, and Apple treats prices like, you know, part of the product spec, like it's part of the marketing of the product, for the same reason that the Mac Pro is still, you know, they didn't reduce the base price on the Mac Pro or any of the other products that just stay around and they don't change. Like,
yeah,
I don't think the current offering of what the $999 MacBook Air has is representative of its pricing in any way, shape, or form. And especially in 2018, if they're going to, like, do something that is a comparable update to that, like, they can add a Retina to it. I fully believe they can add Retina to it, change up some of the port situation, give it a newer chip, and not have to, you know, blow through the price. Obviously, their margins would go down because they've been selling the same design, you know, for so many years now. But general overall Apple profit margins, I'm pretty sure, can still support, like, you know, the quote-unquote three-digit price, which is $999.
Yeah, when this generation MacBook Air was introduced, it was $999. Now, older generations of it were much more expensive. Like, older,
yeah,
less,
like,
capable.
The first generation MacBook Air was, like, 1600, 1700 base.
With a spinning hard drive. And
that was a weird computer.
Flip down USB ports, yeah. Like, that's an anomaly of a machine, more so than the 11-inch MacBook Air that eventually came about. I think you're more optimistic than I am that it'll retain its $1,000 price point and be a better computer at that price. I would bet that it, you know, like, DigiTimes is not my favorite source, but just in thinking, like, independent of what their report says, and thinking about the 12-inch MacBook being $1,300, the third generation N, like, it's a lot of things you're going to have to shake up for any of this to make any sense. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like my most optimistic prediction is that the 12-inch goes to, like, $1099 or something, and the 13-inch is like you know, $1199, $1299, something like that. Like, it's such a mystery to me, because based on the current lineup, a lot needs to change for this to make sense. You know, because, like, how do you go bigger screen yet retain, like, lower specs than the current 12-inch MacBook to get that price? Like, what chip do you use? What decisions do you make? Because there's, like,
single
port.
Well, maybe it's not as slim as the 12-inch. Mm-hmm. Like, you have more tolerance. You know, you don't have to go for something that's super, super razor small.
What about the chip decision?
I mean, you could go for even last year's Kaby Lake chips would be far, you know, a performance increase. So, like, I don't think for the $9.99 price you can expect. Like, for instance, all of Apple's MacBook Pros all use Thunderbolt 3 ports, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. The 12-inch is USB-C.
Right.
I don't think this Retina MacBook Air replacement has to go to Thunderbolt 3. Like, they can cheap out and put USB-C on them only. And maybe you have more than one, but, like, how much is a USB-C port? Like, not, you know, it's like pennies on the dollar.
Yeah.
Like, there are compromises they can make. Like, you could take... And again, it's like spending Apple's money, right? Oh, you just do this and do this. But it you can just look at, like... I think you can look at the Windows lineup. You can look at the iPad lineup. Like, even the most expensive iPads are in, you know, have 120Hz refresh rate screens. They have all this stuff, and they're still, like, under $1,000 most of the time.
Yeah,
like,
and I guess if you compare the 12-inch MacBook, which is $1,200 now, I believe, right? Or is it $1,300 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, brand new is $1,300. So if you compare that to the non-Touch Bar MacBook Pro, both of those are from last year. They're the same price, but they make different decisions around screen size, the chip, you know, how powerful it is. And it's like you pay more for the 12-inch because it's small and portable, not because it's more powerful, even though it's the same price as a literally more capable computer. Unless portability is what you're looking for. It's just with this, it's like this rumored machine is like in between the 12-inch MacBook and the non-Touch Bar MacBook Pro. So it just really complicates it in my mind as to what to expect. Like, the existing lineup needs to change. It can't just be like, replace the MacBook Air.
But the existing lineup is complicated as well. Like,
yeah.
You have a MacBook Air that's, $9.99 but slow and old, but bigger screen than the 12-inch, which is more expensive. And then, directly parallel to the low-end MacBook Pro, which is not as small and thin, but more powerful. Like, they already collide in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm not like 100% on them bringing in a brand new computer that is $999, but I am 100% on them not abandoning the $999 price point.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems ridiculous to me that they're going to keep a MacBook Air around again, like, yeah, for that $999 level. Maybe the new 13-inch starts higher and they take like last year's 12-inch or something and put that at the $999 price. Like, do like an iPhone situation where they kind of bring in last year's model to keep the price points alive.
Yeah, when this was rumored, I think back in the spring, kind of the first go around or so, one of the things that stood out to me, I believe, is that for $1,000 in the 13-inch MacBook Air, I think you get 120 gigabytes of storage SSD, and then for the 12-inch MacBook Air, the lowest you can get is 256 gigabytes. So, maybe they offer a lower storage option of the 12-inch, and that helps bring the cost down because, like, SSD space is something Apple pays for. The RAM is 8 gigabytes, so you really can't play with that. You don't want to give any less than that, at least. But offer a 12-inch with less space, and then offer the 13-inch, like, sticking to Digitimes $1,200 price. Then have that be 256 and higher, or even 128. Like, stick with that 128 price, and all of a sudden, the storage is what you play with. Like, that I can kind of imagine more. And that's something that isn't so obvious when you just look at the machines, is how much storage does it have. But the fact is, Apple will let you buy a MacBook Air with less storage than a 12-inch MacBook, and that costs money. So, 9to5 Mac and Happy Hour are giving away a brand new 2018 Apple MacBook Pro, announced just a few weeks ago. At retail, this costs $1,800, so this is one of our biggest giveaways yet. And that's possible thanks to our sponsor, Hyper. Hyper is the company behind HyperDrive, the most crowdfunded USB-C hub for MacBook Pro ever, raising over $3.1 million on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. The company now has four versions of its HyperDrive for MacBooks and MacBook Pros. What makes HyperDrive different than any other hub on the market is power delivery pass-through charging through both its USB-C ports. Knockoffs only support power delivery through the Thunderbolt 3 USB-C port, forcing users to choose between using Thunderbolt 3 port or charging their MacBook. HyperDrive Duo, Pro, and Net models, on the other hand, allow users to use Thunderbolt 3 and charge their MacBook at the same time. Hyper has been around for many years, making tons of great accessories for Macs. Hyper was behind some of the first batteries and hubs for MacBooks long before USB-C, so they stand out from knockoff vendors. Listeners can support Happy Hour and Hyper by shopping at hypershop.com and using coupon code 9to5MacBook at checkout to save 10%. Again, that's 9to5MacBook at checkout to save 10% site-wide at hypershop.com to enter the giveaway for the new MacBook Pro. Let's knock off the rest of the DigiTimes report, though. So what do they say about AirPower and iPad stuff?
Yeah, so we had that like report from that random Chinese website last week about maybe how the AirPower mount works, and they floated like $150 price point. DigiTimes says that AirPower will be around $160, which is basically the same difference. So there's not a huge difference there. The main thing they say is they expect them to announce the AirPower release date at the September event, which is what I was expecting. Like, I don't think they're randomly going to release the AirPower mat tomorrow. Like, at this point, you can corral it into the press and the, you know, public sphere of interest at the iPhone event. You don't have to, it doesn't have to come out on the same day. It could be like shipping in October or whatever. But I think saying the release date then is perfectly fine. It's embarrassing that it took this long to come out, but at this point, you might as well like embrace it. Like, I, you know, when they did AirPlay 2 and message in iCloud, like a week before WWDC, like, I don't think they would have been that upset if it didn't ship by then. You know, like the year barrier is like unfortunate, but if you're 6 months delayed, 8 months late, it's already, you're already in the can, right? You're already down the drain. Like, there's no, you're already at the point of no return.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot cooler for the company. Like, again, these are the release date thing is such a tech person concern, right?
Yeah.
And it is embarrassing, but so many millions and millions of people find out about the iPhone from the September event, whether it's repeated in the news or whatever else, and you can just have like the brand new shiny iPhones charging on your brand new AirPower mat, and everyone will be, you know, happy as Larry about it. Like, the whole, there's no, I don't think Apple has a stigma like, oh, we delayed it and now it's over a year since it came out. That's really, really bad. Like, at the end of the day, they do what's best to market the product. And for me, the AirPower mat is significant enough that it needs more of a fanfare than, you know, just releasing it a random day on the Apple store, like before, not connected to an event of any kind.
Yeah, the thing with messages in the cloud and AirPlay 2 was from WWDC, you expect everything to be, that's June, to be out around September, November, you know, September, honestly. And anything later than that, like, say, group facing this year, it's kind of a bummer, but, you know, it is what it is. With AirPower, that was in September, and the presentation was, this is a sneak peek of something coming next year. They didn't say when, they just said sometime next year. And, you know, not to defend Apple, you know, but by that measure, like, you do need to put it out before the next event, or like by the next event, to not look like you really just showed it too soon. But you don't have to do it a week before the event to save face. Like, it actually would be really cool to get, there's enough stuff that's unanswered anyway. Like, how much does it cost to buy? And can you still do this as we expected then, the AirPods wireless charging case without AirPods in them? You know, like, can you spend $60 and get that on its own? Are there new AirPods that come with the wireless charging case, like, that replace every AirPods that you can buy today? Are there new AirPods that have new features, like, you know, the built-in Siri recognition stuff? You know, that can all be part of a section that is also about AirPower, you know? So, they obviously could release it any time, and then they also get to those questions at the event. But it seems like there's enough stuff going on in the audio, in the headphone space too, that it can be part of a section.
And yeah, it's worth repeating that Apple has not broken any promises here. They said 2018.
Yep, and it's the closest, still 2018. There's just nothing. No one else has done an AirPower mat. From, you know, there hasn't been a Samsung AirPower mat. There's been a tweet with no context that's like, oh, it's embarrassing that Samsung copied the AirPower mat before Apple could even release theirs. But that was just a wireless charger with a watch charger also attached, which we just...
That tweet annoyed me so much. Like, yeah. It's not even a mat. It's literally like a Qt spot on one side and then this like vertical watch charger on the other side of the thing. And you just,
which you
like,
can buy from Apple.com today, right?
Like, yeah, Belkin will sell you basically the same thing, which puts an Apple Watch on one half of the stand and an iPhone on the other half of the stand. Like,
yeah.
That tweet annoyed me so much.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, okay, so no one's actually copied AirPower yet. Where we've seen things, like even from the day AirPower was announced from IKEA, where there's three literal X marks the spot charging spots on one pad surface thing, but not where you can place anywhere. So, I mean, even on like a technical side, I think Apple will be first to do something that we've not seen anywhere else, you know, and maybe they'll say more about, you know, giving this to the Qi people too. And like, there could be other flavors of AirPower from other companies, you know, using the same stuff. But like, worst case scenario is the event comes around and it's still not ready yet and it won't be ready this year. And then they do need to say, we thought this would be ready sooner, early 2019, you know. And that, like, that is unfortunate if that happens.
You know what would be really elegant for them? If it is ready for reviewers to have them, because then they could have the new watch, the new phone,
yeah,
and as part of that review, have them all charge on the new AirPower mat. Like, that'd be pretty elegant.
Right, it would be. Like, so in terms of, like, guessing when this thing comes out, I would be, like in my mind, I see it being referenced in the event. Not in stores that day, but like maybe it doesn't even have like a date that it will be in stores. It just, they give like a general time frame, like say next week or next month. And then on some random day, it appears, you know, on Apple.com and it's in stores like soon, you know, around that same time. That's kind of what I envision. If you're able to review it, that would be elegant too. You're right.
I mean, they gave AirPods pre-release versions of AirPods.
Yeah.
Because they expected that originally to come out at the end of October, and they gave them alongside the iPhone 7 in September, saying that these are pre-release units and, you know, don't trust them or whatever. You can't do a full review on them, but you can try them out and, you know, have a few words in the experience. They could do it with this, like if the AirPower mat is like November timeframe, they let them, you know, have the coolness of it being part of the review of the phones and get the exposure,
yeah.
And then it can, you know, dwindle off in the distance for a month or two.
Yeah, there'll always be that one ad that had the iPhone 8 with AirPower. Like, you'll never see that again going forward because all the new iPhones will, like the iPhone 10 or bigger, even though it'll work with the 8. Like, I don't think you'll see it advertised that way on a TV ad. That'll just be a little blip out there. And then finally, DigiTimes kind of echoes the iPad Pro rumors that we've heard. So that's exciting. And then shocker, they say there won't be a new iPad Mini this year.
That's something that Kuo, when he was at KGI, has been saying for like a year and a half, like, no new iPad Mini,
yeah.
End of the line. And everyone's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then a year goes by, and it's like, no new iPad Mini. And then even all the rumors are like, no new iPad Mini. And it's like, well, rest in peace.
Yeah, I guess what they do say here that's additive is that the iPad Mini won't go away. Like, it's not like they're going to say, now we sell a moderately priced iPhone that's 6.1 inches and a very expensive iPhone that's 6.5 inches. Like, in my mind, those are still not iPad Mini replacements. Like, you do have the debate of, is a phone in your pocket more convenient than any size tablet? And that's a real like battle between Apple's products. But even the 6.5 inch like iPhone whatever plus it's going to be called, the 6.5 inches, that's a big difference than 7.9 inches, you know, still. Mm-hmm. Like,
And it's aspect ratio as well, right? Like, the phones are, you know, thin and, like, skinny and tall.
Yeah.
And iPads are more, you know, boxy, like 4x3. So
yeah.
It's just, like, a different product. So they're not direct replacements, though you can argue, like, it encroaches on the ground enough that it's not important. Or I think the bigger driver is that the 9.7-inch iPad is getting so cheap now that the iPad Mini gets pushed out from the other direction.
Yeah, I don't think you would have both of those products, but I don't think if you love the iPad Mini that, you know, for whatever it costs today, like $400, because they don't give you a lower storage option.
Yeah, it's 120 only.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be happy replacing your $400 iPad Mini with an $1,100 iPhone that's a little bit smaller, you know, an inch and a half smaller. So that comparison kind of bothers me. But
they're going to still sell an iPad Mini 4.
Yeah, for 120 gigabytes for $400, like, you know. And we have one in my family that was purchased this year because it was, you know, my wife wanted that size for the portability, and that was the only storage option. And I was like, okay, we'll buy it. So guess enough people will continue to buy it. They're still going to sell it until the software doesn't support it anymore. Next up is a Bloomberg report that once again mentions this MacBook Air replacement. Only kind of in passing, like it's the first half of the report, but what it adds to it is a little bit curious. So this is a quote from the report. The new laptop will look similar to the current MacBook Air, but will include thinner bezels around the screen. So with the MacBook Air, you have those silver bezels and they're thick. Every newer Mac since then has thinner bezels. So maybe the overall footprint of the 13-inch machine matches that of the non-touch bar MacBook Pro. Like, that's reasonable to expect, I think.
The problem with this quote is it just can be interpreted in so many different ways. Like,
yeah.
What looks like the current MacBook Air but also doesn't? Like, does the 12-inch MacBook look like the current MacBook Air? Does a thinner MacBook Air that have no ports still look like a MacBook Air? Like, the definition is completely ambiguous, so it's, you know, hard to derive anything in particular.
Yeah, to me, the difference between Air and the non-touch bar Pro, like even if the speed catches up, just based on being updated for the first time in ages, is it a wedge-shaped computer or is it, you know, a brick? Like, the current Pros are thinner than, like, professionals would like for the trade-offs that it has with it. But it's not MacBook Air. Like, maybe the actual dimensions that as thick as points are, but the fact is, like, the Pros have the same dimensions from the front to the end, and the Air and the 12-inch MacBook, they're wedge-shaped, where
they taper off.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And they're still, like, you know, you can measure the feet, and you can measure, like, how the edge is, like, you know, does the iMac trick, where it's thin at the very edge, but it gets deeper at the bottom and has, like, a little bottom to it. But it's still, like, it's thinner at the trackpad side than on the back of the keyboard side. And I don't think we know yet if this will be one or the other, you know. But to be a MacBook Air replacement, I feel like we're looking at a wedge shape and not a, you know, the same thickness throughout.
The thing that scares me is that it mentions thinner bezels, but it doesn't mention glass bezels.
Like, yeah.
Are they seriously going to introduce a new computer that has an aluminium frame around the screen like the current MacBook Airs do?
That would be weird. I mean, the 12-inch MacBook doesn't do that. And the Air is the only one that ever did, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it depends how, like, if you go back years and years and years, like, sure, the old MacBook Pros had, you know, more metal around the screen. But in the recent history, it's all glass, glossy screens. Like,
yeah.
It's so dated. Like, you could take a current MacBook Air, put a glass, glossy, high-resolution screen on it, and then up the internals to, like, modern specs and put some USB-C ports spattered around the place, and you'd have, like, a perfectly legitimate computer.
Yeah.
But, like, the screen is everything. Like, Apple prides itself on having great displays on, like, all of its products, and then you have the laggards that kind of drain it down. Like, again, going back to, like, the iPad comparison, the cheapest 9.7-inch iPad has, like, a beautiful screen. Like, it's not as good as the Pros, but it's not bad. Like, and the Airs just hang around with bad screens. Old, mm-hmm. bad, terrible screens.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot to wonder about this machine. Like, there's been a lot of rumors about it, and there's been some reporting about it. But there's so many details that we don't know yet. Like, what will the I/O be like? Is it all USB-C? Is it one port, two ports, four ports? Is it Thunderbolt 3 or only USB-C? I don't know. Like, there's an opportunity here to introduce some I/O that went away that could come back. Like, on all of the iMacs now that you buy, whether it's an iMac or iMac Pro, you get at least one USB-A port. I don't care about that. the SD card I love, because I put my SD card on my computer all the time, and I use the adapter every time I do. The MacBook Air has that. You know, even the headphone jack, I feel like, is up in the air, because this year the iPads are supposed to remove the headphone jack. They've been on the iPhones for a few years now. There's just, you know, it's like every detail of this computer is a mystery. The price, the specs, the I.O.
Like, the iPhones are getting USB-C charge cables now.
Yeah.
So it'd be really weird if they introduced a new laptop which carries on, you know, USB-A boxy style. Like, I can't imagine them doing a laptop ever again that has traditional USB ports.
Yeah, the iMac, I mean, even the smallest one's 21.5 inches, and you've got so much space in the back to throw in. And it's all out of sight, so it's purely functional of whatever ports you want. And you know, that was kind of a surprise compromise, but they did it. With the notebook line, it's you actually have less space to work with, you know, not to mention, what the chipset can handle. And, you know, so I own the 12-inch MacBook, and I like it in a lot of ways. I could use a little bit more. Like, I think the biggest constraint that I have is not being able to charge it and then use I converted all my cables to USB-C when I had my MacBook Pro in 2016, and that was no problem. But then I go to use just the MacBook on its own, and there's one port for charging, the USB-C port, and I have an adapter that lets you charge and use – it's Apple's adapter lets you charge and use USB-A and HDMI. And so then I need to use USB-A again with that adapter, because it isn't an adapter that adds multiple USB-C ports. So then I'm like, that's frustrating. Like, and now I'm in a mix of A and B, A and C again. What I would like, because right now I've been using the 2018 MacBook Pro, the 15-inch with the i9 processor. And it's like, definitely something in the middle of these two computers is more ideal for me, and probably one that doesn't exist yet. And this is likely it. And I'm thinking about what I would want from the I.O. and the ports situation. Definitely more than one USB-C port. You know, charge and plug up my microphone for podcasting. Maybe even do that, plus have, like, one more thing if I need to. So at least three. Yeah. And then, you know, like, four would be great, even if it's not Thunderbolt 3. Because I've got a Thunderbolt 3 drive, but I don't have to have Thunderbolt 3 yet. Like, USB-C is fine, you know.
Yeah, and Thunderbolt 3 limits their internal bandwidth based on, like, the PCI lane supported by the chipset, which is why, you know, the cheapest 13-inch MacBook Pro only has two USB-C ports. They're Thunderbolt 3 enabled, but I think the inconvenience of only being two outweighs the trade-offs of those two being, you know, faster and higher speed. Like, they could easily do four USB-C ports on this hypothetical new computer.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be Thunderbolt 3, but, you know, you'd still be able to plug in your camera, your mouse, if you've got an external mouse, or you'll charge your phone with it. Like, you don't need... And you still get the big benefit for me of the new generation of all their computers is that you can charge on either side. Like, standard USB supports charging on either side. Like, you're charging through the same port. It doesn't have to be Thunderbolt 3 to charge. So... That's still one of the biggest wins for me when I got my 2016 MacBook Pro, is that wherever I sit, I can plug the charger in the left or the right, and it doesn't matter.
It's yeah, and using this review unit MacBook Pro from Apple for the last few weeks, I always default to the top left port, because it's like where MagSafe was. But if it's more convenient for the right side, then that's nice, and that's a nice option. So yeah, you know. The thing about the MacBook Air, too, is, like, if this replaces that, if the MacBook Air goes away because of this computer, the MacBook Air has a lot of ports. Like, it's got, what does it have? Like, at least two USB-A ports, Thunderbolt 3. So then there's, like, three data ports. You know, if you went down to just two USB-C ports, that would be
a downgrade. Thunderbolt 2, not Thunderbolt 3.
Okay, it's Thunderbolt. Yeah, it's got two USB-A ports and then a Thunderbolt 2 port on the back, on the back right side. So there's a three data ports plus MagSafe, you know. And if this only had two USB-C ports, one would be for charging, so that replaces MagSafe. And then you've only got one data port, you know. So it feels like it needs to have four. And
yeah, because there's no way of doing three, because then it'd be asymmetric.
Right, unless they're all on one side. But, you know, if you go wedge-shaped, then that's tricky to do anyway. So it feels like the options are two or four. And you know, just accept that you don't have to use Thunderbolt 3. And like Thunderbolt 2 on the MacBook Air is not like how Thunderbolt 3 is also just USB-C. Like, it's a different connector. It was
the mini DisplayPort connector.
Yeah, which, unless you bought Thunderbolt-specific, you know, stuff, you probably didn't use that port. Like, unless you used it to connect to a monitor, I guess. But the fact that, you know, right now, that would become a data port that you might actually use, you know. Because I was surprised looking back that the MacBook Air now has Thunderbolt 2. Even though it isn't 3, just thinking Thunderbolt fast data transfer on a MacBook Air, misremembered that did not be there, but it is. So that'd be my ideal. It's like you get 4 ports. They don't have to be Thunderbolt 3. They're just USB-C ports, but you get you know, as many as you do on the MacBook Pros. They're just not the same speed, and that's a trade-off that's worth having, I think.
Well, you get more than the 2-port MacBook Pro.
Sure. Well, in my mind, that computer doesn't need to exist anymore. Get rid of it. Retire it. And they have done that in the past. Like, the one that I recall is the 13-inch aluminum unibody MacBook. 13, you know, it was like the Pro, but it didn't have the same ports. And then the next year, they took away. It was in 2008, and they replaced that with the 2009 13-inch MacBook Pro. You know, they upgraded the specs, and it was like $100 cheaper, too. So that was one of the situations where the new thing was a better deal than the old thing, you know, and they gave it a new name and some new ports, but it looked the same, basically, like, you know.
Yeah, and obviously we're waiting to see what Apple's going to do with that computer, because they refreshed the Touch Bar MacBook Pros, but not the function key ones.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, yeah, I remain optimistic about that computer. Like, that one, you know, it feels like it could be for me, but there's so much mystery around it that, you know, I'm nowhere near deciding that, because we don't know what decisions Apple will make about it.
It's like there's an eventuality that fits exactly what you want, and then a fair few others which are, you know, completely different directions almost.
Yeah, I say this: if it has one port, then there's no benefit from replacing my 12-inch MacBook. If it has two, it's not much of a benefit. Like, you're really close. It's not worth spending money over. And if it has four, then I think that's pretty ideal. You know, regardless of Thunderbolt 3 not being there, if it's just USB-C, then it's like, you know, who cares? Fine. So. This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Udemy. Udemy offers over 60,000 online courses on a variety of fresh topics, so you can learn anything on your schedule. Udemy is the largest and most accessible online learning marketplace, with the most courses, teachers, and opportunities for students everywhere around the globe. Udemy offers courses on a range of topics, including brand new lectures and classes on iOS 12 and Xcode 10, learning to develop apps with Swift 5, and even courses on how to shoot better photos from your iPhone with updates specifically for iOS 12 before it's even public. And even though Udemy has a wealth of knowledge about technology topics, Udemy has teachers with expertise in a wide range of areas. For example, I've been brushing up on a nutrition masterclass to learn more about meal planning and healthy eating, which includes over 3.5 hours of video, and I've got courses on music production and photography queued up after that. The best part about Udemy is how it fully embraces technology. You can view courses on your Mac, iPhone, or iPad, view course content by section and complete quizzes as you learn, access a Q&A section between other students and instructors, and even bookmark specific sections in the videos just by pressing the B key. So check out Udemy and learn how to improve your skills today. Go to ude.my/happyhour right now and get 90% off when you sign up for classes. You'll not find better prices, so sign up for classes now using our link, ude.my/happyhour, and get access to life-changing classes for 90% off. And make sure to download Udemy's app for your iPhone so you can stream your studies wherever you go. That's ude.my/happyhour, ude.my/happyhour. Thanks to Udemy for sponsoring the show. The next thing that Bloomberg touches on is the Mac Mini. This is only the second time that we've heard of Mac Mini for this year. You know, right now the oldest Mac Mini, or the current Mac Mini, is from 2014, I believe. And that's obviously a long, long time ago. Like, if you bought it brand new and you bought AppleCare, your warranty has expired. Sorry. the first mention we heard was from Ming-Chi Kuo. It was like in a bulleted list of a lot of things coming this year. It just said Mac Mini. All right, wow. Now Bloomberg says the same with a little bit more information. They say, for this year's model, Apple is focusing primarily on these pro users, and new storage and processor options are likely to make it more expensive than previous versions, the people said. And prior to that, they mentioned using it for media, server farms, and I think development or something like that. So the thing about this is, like, I don't know what you think, but I can imagine this being like $100 more, because the Mac Mini has been $599. It's been $499 like it is right now. Like, it's gone up and down over the years. So I could see it being $600 or $700 brand new. Probably not $1,000 for like just the box, you know.
I like where it says a pro-focused Mac Mini. Like, to me, the Mac Mini has never been a consumer product. Like, it's always a pro thing. Like, you go, if you talk to Apple, they want you to buy an iMac if you're buying a computer. You know, that's the consumer Mac. It's not this stupid little box that you have to bring your own accessories to and then plug in the gangly screen.
Like, well, I kind of disagree with you about that, because I feel like it's like iMac is like you're all in, but Mac Mini, aside from like the people that are already in the Mac ecosystem, has been like, you have a PC, you have a screen, a mouse and keyboard that you like, and all you want to do is replace your PC tower, and then that's the Mac Mini. It's like, that's the cheapest way to switch to Mac OS. And I know for me, like, I used to have a 2012 Mac Mini, and the reason I got that was I had a MacBook Air from 2012, and I started doing this job, and I wanted a desk with a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse, and so I bought a cheap display, a keyboard and a mouse, and I was using my MacBook Air in clamshell mode, and then it was like, you know, I really just need a desk. Like, I'm tired of this being so fiddly, and I want an always-on desktop computer. So I bought a Mac Mini, and that was like the cheapest way in. And it was like decently, I think it was like new $1,000, because it had like higher end specs. But to me, it's like you can spec out a Mac Mini, but at the low end, like it doesn't need to be for pros. And I can see this year, like, nothing being different about it. It's still being Mac Mini. Don't call it Mac Mini Pro. Maybe there are color options, because, you know, why not? Like, the 12-inch MacBook has color options. It's not for pros. You know, but the fact that it has a modern chip in it and some, you know, higher end specs, like, pros can benefit from that. But I think you can probably just update the Mac Mini with modern specs and, you know, say it's for pros. But I kind of felt like Apple sees it as like whenever they had the Mac roundtable, it came up, but I think Schiller like called it out as this, that being a consumer product. And the focus of the roundtable being about pros, right?
Well, they said it remains an important product in their lineup.
Yeah, I feel like there was a distinction though that was like there was that, but like why not discuss it? Today's about pros, and that's.
I don't remember them saying it wasn't for pro markets.
Yeah,
necessarily. Like, because yeah. I think a big counter to what you just said is, you know, 80% of what Apple sells are laptops, like. Before you even worry about whether the people should buy a Mac Mini or iMac, like, you're already in the niche category.
And yeah, well,
I believe by far the mainstream option is, you know, all in one integrated keyboard and mouse. Buy it for $1,000, you get a nice iMac all in one. Like,
yeah,
the Mac Mini has to be like niche, and maybe not pro, but it's definitely like not mainstream.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I think when Mac Mini was brand new, it was like Windows switchers, here you go. It's just the box you can replace your tower with. And eventually, the 13-inch MacBook Pro with the optical drive was that. Like, I think they acknowledged at one point that like Windows switchers chose that computer more often than any other. And like some press release that updated it or said it still existed or something. I don't know. But now, like, if you just look at Apple's marketing, any iPad is that, like, especially iPad Pro. But, like, any iPad is what they want Windows users to switch to, you know, and it's, like, not even a Mac anymore. So maybe for it to exist, you do need to, like reshuffle the focus of it and say it's a powerhouse, you know, a server computer of some sort. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But at any rate, you know, maybe it'll cost more, but if it only costs like $100 more, I don't think it really counts, because it's cost that much before. and they've gone up and down with it.
Well, it's like you can already spec out the current one to have higher end options, which put the price up. So if they just change out the baseline to be higher end options to start with, then you're just kind of not offering the cheaper ones, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which between and I would 2012 and 2014, wasn't there complaints about not like what was the difference there? They upgraded it, but people were unhappy. Like you couldn't.
I don't follow them that many closely enough, but from what I vaguely remember is that the 2014 update added a slower model that was cheaper.
Mm.
So the the $499 version.
Yeah.
It used to be $599, and they introduced $499, which was not a performance upgrade on the previous year, but they put the price down.
Yeah,
I believe vaguely, that is what people were upset about.
Yeah, I vaguely recall maybe it was like, you could get quad core, and then suddenly you can only get dual core or something. Maybe I don't know.
They down-spec'd it to make them to put the price down.
Yeah, it's all ancient history now.
I think that was what everyone was complaining about.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of this one, I would expect that it is similar to performance to a mid to high end MacBook Pro, like an i7, i9 kind of deal, 16 gigs of RAM probably. You know, blow your heart out, use it for whatever you want.
Yeah, I found. Let's see. I found. Okay, so this is what Schiller said. He said regarding this is quoted from, I guess, during Fireball. Regarding iMac, Schiller also said that new iMacs are in the works, slated for release sometime this year. No specifics other than this year. That was eventually the iMac Pro that was shown at WWDC and released in December, including configurations of iMac specifically with the Pro consumer in mind, and acknowledging our most popular is with Mac. Let's see. So they get around to the Mac Mini. Near the end, this is John Gruber writing, John Pekowski had the presence of mind to ask about the Mac Mini, which hadn't been mentioned at all until that point. Schiller, on that I'll say the Mac Mini is an important product in our lineup, and we weren't bringing it up because it's more of a mix of consumer and some pro use. The Mac Mini remains a product in our lineup, but nothing more to say about it today. Okay, so some consumers and then some pros. Yeah.
So this update, if Bloomberg is going to be believed, alienates the some consumers, and they're only making it for some pros.
Yeah, it goes from a mix of consumers and some pro use to a mix of pros and some consumers, maybe. So. Which honestly might be fair for a standalone box like that today. Like, it won't be a Mac Pro replacement, although maybe, compared to the 2013 one, it could be. But it won't be like whatever the 2019 Mac Pro is like, where you can do crazy things with it. It will be more tame.
And I don't think it will be as fast as like an iMac Pro either. It's not going to have Xeon in it. It will be like an iMac configuration without a computer, like a high-end iMac configuration without a screen, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. Another bit of a mystery there, but maybe it's just the framing is we can just disagree on that about how they present it. We'll see. Like, do they show it on stage and say, like, for our pro users, I just want a Mac Mini.
For pro users, here's a Mac Mini.
Yeah,
I reckon this is a press release product.
Yeah. Now, a question I want to get to before we get to our next topic is. We expect a lot of things this year, from the Quo report, from the various reports that are, from history. We're expecting iPhones and iPads and Apple Watches and a variety of Macs, not just one, but a variety of Macs. Do you think there'll be one event in September, or do you think there'll be a September and an October event? Because they've done both in the past, a big combo event and two different events.
I would say they will only do one event. And I think if you look at, quote-unquote, how much stuff there is, I don't think it's so packed that it's so out of whack with other years. Like, you have an iPhone 5.8-inch, which I think they will downplay as, like, the same, faster, and cheaper. So you've already seen, like, for in many ways, the iPhone 10 last year would take longer to explain than this year's iPhone lineup.
Sure. The whole thing.
Yeah, because last year they essentially did two iPhone presentations because they did the whole, it didn't fly with anyone related to technology, but, like, if you're an average Joe watching this stream, Phil Schiller introduced the iPhone 8, and then they were like, surprise, we've got another one. And then they did the whole thing again on iPhone X, repeating, they don't have, you know, all the Animoji stuff, how Face ID works, the gesture navigation, all those kind of demos took up a, you know, a healthy chunk of time, and they repeated the same features in the iPhone X that were also present in the iPhone 8, like the camera upgrades and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's quite, in just in terms of raw time, like, I think it kind of works out. Like, now you've got three phones. Last year you had three phones, but this year you probably don't have to spend as much time on those three phones because they're more familiar. And then Mac Mini, I would say, gets bumped off to press release status. You have watches, which will be Premiere, and then you have a new MacBook, whatever this 13-inch that gets stage time.
What do the iPads fit in there?
And then the iPads.
Yeah.
The iPads are going to be really nice, but they are pretty straightforward. Like, thinner bezel, no home button, an iPhone 10, but 11 inches.
And Emoji Now.
And four products can fit in 2 hours without much hassle.
Okay, just for the sake of debate, I'll take the position that there'll be two events. The first one with iPhone, Apple Watch, and iPad. And the second one, I don't know. Like, if I had to guess that, I would say iPhone, Apple Watch, and then audio stuff. Like in the old days when there was like a new version of iTunes, and then there was like iTunes news. Except now it's like headphone news. It's hard to, if there's not a, if the iPads are not September, if they're actually October, which would be a bummer, I guess. Then I would guess iPad and Mac go together again, like in years past. But if it's hard to see one event for just Mac stuff right now, like, because it's not, unless it was like a teaser for the Mac Pro, but I don't expect that. So it's hard to fill up that October event.
And the other Macs that are on the docket to get updates are small-scale performance updates, yeah. Really. Like, the only new form factor is this new, whatever this new MacBook is. So the other ones can all be press release products, in my opinion.
I mean, like, the overhead or the on-ear headphones from Apple. Oh, didn't those get pushed off to, like, next year?
That is the current rumor, yeah. They were originally planned for late 2018, but they are 2019 products.
Yeah, so it's tough to do a whole audio event if all it is AirPods plus Siri with it, you know.
HomePod Mini, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, surprise.
Beats AirPlay 2, out of nowhere.
Yeah, so I want to argue with you and just take the position of two events, but it's hard for me to get my head around that if iPads are not out.
Already won, then.
Yeah, and they don't, they certainly don't feel like October. So, so I guess we'll both stick with one event. On the topic of Apple Watches, there's been new evidence this week that watches are coming. Of course, we expect that based on the timeline. But there is something that this kind of suggests that would be different about the lineup. So tell me about that report.
Yeah, so this is, again, dipping into the Eurasian Economic Encryption Database, which has provided many insights into various products over the last couple of years. They registered 6 new Apple Watch models that are described as personal wearable devices running WatchOS 5. That's all you get told in the Russian database, but it's definitely confirmation that new watches exist. The kind of extrapolation is that there's only 6 of what we believe to be the Series 4. And if you look at the Series 3 registrations, there's 8. And what you have is obviously 38 and 42 sizes, again, depending on exactly what happens, you see those sizes might change or they might stay the same. But they have 2 sizes, and then they have aluminium, stainless steel, and ceramic. But the Series 3 had aluminium in cellular and in just GPS only. So that's how you got 8 last year and only 6 this year.
Yeah, so you get 6 model numbers this year, and these are, like, examples, A1977, A2008. So those are your model numbers. And if it's the same color of the material and chips, then it's the same model number.
Yes.
But if it's a different material, it's a different model number. And if it has a different, like, configuration of GPS only or GPS and LTE, then it has its own model number. And so that's how we get to maybe the lineup changes at the bottom.
Yeah, that's the historic how it's gone. Again, Apple can make models however they want, but that's if you're just following the pattern, then that is how it has gone.
Right.
Now, the options here, obviously, I think the most hopeful and optimistic view is they drop the non-cellular aluminium, and so all of the new Series 4 watches are cellular only.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you want to be more disheartened, you could say they're dropping ceramic because nobody bought it. But
I don't really believe
that one, because even if it sells in low quantities, I think it's a cool, like, aspirational thing for them to have. Like, I think it looks cool, and it's like, oh, I'm kind of interested in it, but it's too expensive. I'll go and buy a cheaper watch.
I mean, like, they're obtainable.
Yes, they're not exorbitant, and I don't think nobody's buying them, but it's obviously a very small percentage.
Yeah, the only difference is the way that it looks, not the way that it functions. But they're cheaper than I guess this year some iPhones and some iPads and most Macs. Yeah. So.
And I think Apple likes showing off that they can do cool materials in cool ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would mean that you know this year you could choose: do you want to have a Series 3? Yes. Okay, do you want LTE? If you want stainless steel or ceramic, you always get LTE. But if you get aluminum, you can choose. You can save some money and not have LTE. You know, whether you want to activate it or not is up to you. But if you get LTE, then you get a little bit more storage on board too. So it makes sense. Like in the series, so from the first generation, there was only the Apple Watch. And then the second year, there was get rid of the first generation because it's terrible and have Series 1 and Series 2. But Series 1 is actually Series 2 in terms of speed?
Yeah, it was processor upgrades but not water resistance.
But not water resistance and no GPS. And then the next year they get rid of Series 2, keep Series 1, and have different flavors of Series 3. So it's like Series 3 and like Series 3.5 basically. So it's like if you never had the Series 1, you know, it was like the chip, it didn't change in Series 1 and 2 really, but then in Series 3 the chip didn't change either. It was just the LTE or not. So for Series 4 we can guess that they all have LTE, which could mean that they all cost a little more. And because the main feature we assume is the way it looks, the design, you know, that's something that you can charge more for over function. It's kind of funny that way, but I think you can get by like that. And then maybe you retain the non-LTE Series 3 and you retire the Series 1, like, optimistically?
That's what I'd hope would happen.
Yeah.
And that maybe they can't get the non-LTE Series 3 down to 269, which is what the Series 1 currently sells for. But they could have, like, the 299 Series 3 and then you jump up to, like, 370 for the first cellular Series 4 model.
Yeah. At any rate, I think it's nice to not revive Series 2 and have a speed drop to go to GPS only, because you can retain Series 3 speed and features like Siri having a voice and then still not have LTE. Like they could have a version of the Series 4 with no LTE, you know, repeat last year, but then we'd have eight model numbers in this lineup and we only have six. So and that's why we had this educated guess, which I kind of get behind. So
I think it'd be really, really cool if they can have a Series 4 new design watch for at the price point of the Series 3 non-cellular, which is what, like $340?
Yeah.
That would be so good, but it just seems a bit like fairy tale land. So I think the way they're going to spin it is make all the Series 4s include cellular, which can keep the prices up.
Yeah.
And then have like a Series 3 either stay exactly where it is now at 350 or put it down to like the 300 level.
Yeah, being Series 3 aluminum with LTE price wouldn't surprise me. And I know that whenever the Series 3 with LTE came out, my guess for what the LTE cost would be was higher than what it was, especially for steel, because they didn't do a whole lot of – I forget the year-over-year change if there even was one, but it wasn't like dramatic. You know, I think I thought – it wasn't like, say, for example, iPad difference where it's $130 as the difference just
for
LTE.
Yeah, it's $50 difference on the watches, right?
Yeah, I believe so. So in that regard, I was surprised. And so even if they just carry over the same pricing year-over-year, even on aluminum, and don't offer the non-LTE Series 4, I think that's pretty – that's still okay, just because last year they were pretty generous with the pricing. I wouldn't say not generous, but not as stingy as they could have been.
I'd say it was reasonably priced.
Sure, yeah, reasonably priced. Yeah. That's fine.
I hope that the Series 4 brings more carriers. And this isn't a US concern, but no. In the UK, the Series 3 is still only available on one carrier. Which is the reason I have, one of the reasons at least, that I didn't buy the cellular version. Yeah. It's not my carrier, so I couldn't use it.
Yeah, and what a pain to even have to worry about LTE or not. Like, if you just say Series 4, all of them have LTE. Because if you change your mind in the future and you bought the wrong hardware, you can't change your mind. Like, and if you buy your watch, say you buy a Series 3 for 2 years, and your carrier gets support in the second year, you got to wait until you buy a new watch, I guess. Like, so I think if this is correct, that every new Series 4 has LTE, even if it comes at the cost of not having the cheaper Series 4 with no LTE, it's for the best because then you don't have to worry. Like, it's such a, it's like you don't have iPhones without LTE. You know, you have iPod Touches sort of, but and you have iPads with LTE and no Macs have LTE. But on the watch side, it's like such a good fit because even from the first watch, people assumed it made phone calls on its own until you explained how it worked. It's like that's what
people
the
still ask me that today. Like, I just walk around and then you can make a phone call right from that. And I'm like, yeah, and now I can say yes, but if I had the cellular version, like,
yeah. And like with the iPhone, you never, once the iPhone got GPS, because like didn't have GPS originally, it's like you never went back to offer like a cheaper version without GPS with the same like chip speed. So it's like kind of like a nerdy thing to worry about, I think, and not something that if the watch appeals to you, you shouldn't have to worry about what does it have inside. Like if it's, the watch can do this if you buy a new one. Oh,
yeah, even if the base entry price to get a Series 4 goes up compared to what the Series 3 is. As long as they have like a Series 3 around the $300 level, I think it's good for the product roadmap, for the lineup. Like, because the Series 3 is not like a void. It's a perfectly fine watch, right? It's still, I'm still really happy with it.
Yeah.
And then you have the new flashy designs at the higher price point. So if they do that, then it's still good for the lineup as a whole, even if they've bumped the prices up a little bit.
What do they do with the crown? Does it retain the red ring?
They'll have blue crowns. No, because the external design has changed, they won't need any dots.
Right. Yeah. And
please
in the past,
don't
like,
have dots. I hate the dots.
They've had black dots on steel. Anyway, no dots on aluminum. It's just the color. And they've also had white dots in addition to the red one. They had white dots in the original editions, the gold editions. So it does have white dots. So they still have some recycled dots they could ship out.
Yeah, there. I don't mind color match dots to the hardware. It was the flat red on everything that I can't stand, even to this day.
It grew on me, but mostly, I don't know. I think it looks better with steel than it does with the aluminum ones. So yeah, what do they do with the crown this year? Well, that's one of the mysteries that we'll watch for. This week, Apple disclosed that Back to My Mac. What's going away for macOS Mojave? It's been missing all summer. I didn't notice. I don't know if anyone has noticed before now, which speaks to like its adoption lately. But they published a support document for what you should use to replace Back to My Mac, which was in its current description an iCloud feature that lets you remotely access other Macs that you own. I believe it predated iCloud though, so maybe that's only a current description. Did you use Back to My Mac? Do you care about this?
I do not believe I have ever used Back to My Mac. I have used remote desktop things before, Apple remote desktop, but like I've used the iMessage screen sharing because we've shared our screens for a few times and I've shared it with some other people.
Yeah,
but the Back to My Mac line of a feature specifically I've not used.
Yeah, so I've had it turned on and I've like put it in my password to check the box in the iCloud panel. And I've done, like, from my MacBook, Access Finder on my iMac. And I think that's, like, what this talk is really about. And I've even done screen sharing, like, remotely drag things around, not just, like, look in the Finder, but, like, see my iMac at home at the time. And what they recommend now is iCloud Drive for files, which I use, which is okay, fine. Screen sharing, which I'm not sure if they mean like by Finder or only like by messages, but surely they mean by Finder because messages someone would need to respond on the other machine. But maybe that's what they mean is going away, is screen sharing like without someone answering on the other side through Finder. And then remote desktop, or Mac remote, Apple remote desktop?
Apple remote desktop.
Yeah, which is an $80 app. I have it from the Apple Store.
Why is it $80?
Because it's like they haven't updated it in a long time, and like they used to charge for OSs, and they used to charge for like a lot more for the server stuff, and that's going away. And they used to like it's just legacy. Like even the price is legacy. You know, I mean, the only thing they really charge for now is like pro apps, and nothing in the $80 category. Like wasn't Aperture on $80, and like that went away. So I don't know why they need to adjust the price, especially because the last update was like a bug fix release in February 2017. So it's like, if Back to My Mac goes away, if people care, like, I'm just confused about what it actually was. I wrote the story on it.
I believe the main loss is it's showing up in the site, that the you know, your other Mac hard drive showing up
in the Finder. Okay. Yeah.
But for most people, a much better solution is to use iCloud Drive, iCloud Storage, cloud offerings, and just have everything in sync everywhere. Not like, oh, now entering the silo of your Mac at home, and now you're coming out of this at the Mac at home. Like, I can see why they got rid of it, because for the vast majority of the user base, like, you don't need it, and there's perfectly good and superior replacements.
Yeah, and I've seen people recommend Screens, which I've also used, and one of my favorite things about Screens is that they have a really good iPad app, and even like a functional iPhone app where you can remote into your Mac if it's powered on and online from your iPhone or iPad, and like that's way more designed than like Back to My Mac was, which was only like Mac to Mac. You know, like they've got trackpad mode, they've got like touch mode. Yeah, I used to use the elliptical in my office and have my iPad on the elliptical with Screens running, and then control my Mac on my desk, like right next to me. But you know, I can't have the Mac on my, at the time, I guess it was an iMac, I can have like, or the Mac Mini on my elliptical. So I'd use the iPad to like control what was right next to me. But it's really functional. Yeah, so I guess if like you're a daily Back to My Mac user, you know what you're losing with as part of macOS Mojave is when this goes away. but there's, I think it's fair that there's a lot of replacements, and that you probably shouldn't invest in Apple Remote Desktop for $80 unless there's like an update next month for it, you know, or whenever Mojave comes out. Because like, man, it's, you know, paying for.
They need to drop the price on that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like Apple, that is not significant for Apple. That is not why their services revenue is going up and stuff like that. So. And then lastly,
can you imagine Luca Massi next earnings call? We had a nice services bump from all the people buying Apple Remote Desktop.
Yeah. Like I said, I had it for free because if you work at the Apple Store, I believe this was the case in 2012 or so, but it's probably true now, is you get the Mac App Store Apple apps, like redemption codes for those. And so I just got whatever I could. Back to My Mac was apparently one of those things because I have a little cloud next to it, but I've never used it. And then last thing I want to mention is the Apple design lead, Jen Folse, who had stage time at multiple Apple events, has left the company to go work at a company called Caffeine, founded by two ex-Apple team members. She's, I think, VP of product now at Caffeine, which is like a social broadcast gaming platform of some sort. It's kind of not in my area of expertise.
It's like Twitch.
Yeah, like Twitch, like a Twitch competitor. Except their website won't load in Safari, which makes you use Chrome or Firefox. Although their about page will load in Safari. I find that very curious. The thing about this, though, is whenever I was on vacation, we received a tip about this, right?
We received a tip exactly 1 month before they announced it. So the 21st of July,
yeah,
we were informed that. And she's Apple TV lead, so she's the one who does all the Apple TV OS stuff. And yep. Announced this, you know, the space screensavers most recently. And yeah, so on the 21st of July, we received a tip saying Jen Folse moved to Caffeine. In the interim, I tried to get confirmation from various places and did not succeed. And then it came out in the news. So
yeah, it was my grand idea was email her and see if it bounces back. We tried that in July, didn't work. August 1st rolled around, like, try again. Maybe it was like a July 30th, you know, in July it goes away. No, so no bounce back then. And the day before Caffeine sent out a press release announcing this, I was doing daily, like, LinkedIn checks, you know, try and find confirmation of this. And so I commented to you in iMessage that if she's still at Apple, she's racking up fake time at the company if she's no longer there, because LinkedIn just keeps tracking it if you don't change it. And the next day she goes away. And one thing I did was I was looking on Twitter and like tweets that she had liked. And I would never do like a story out of this because I think it's like crummy to like dig up stuff and like make a haha out of it.
But it's just, like personal accounts, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, but it just like it disincentivizes like using the internet publicly. But there were like funny things like a faving a tweet about like the mouse, the magic mouse charging port being in the bottom and like how that works, and one about like Siri from Jim Dalrymple. There was some funny stuff there. So, and then the next day, it all comes to an end. There's a press release that announces the hire. So. One question is like, okay, who takes her job now? And I'm sure there's like someone to rise up in the ranks. But the reason this is all like familiar and like worth discussing is because she was at several Apple events since the Apple TV 4K was introduced. She
introduced the original Apple TV.
Yeah, well, Apple TV 4K. I don't think they had her.
She did Apple TV in 2015 as well. Yeah,
2015.
Yeah, the original, not the 4K. The fourth generation Apple TV.
I'm saying Apple TV 4K, but I mean Apple TV the fourth generation one, the one that runs tvOS. Yeah.
Yeah. She basically led tvOS design.
Yeah. So since the modern Apple TVs have been around, not the original one or the little smaller ones, but the current ones have been around. She's done those presentations and they were pretty lively because it was like, you know, here's a demo that included like ended on metal music playing on stage, and it was like, wow, it's cool. So. She won't be there anymore.
And I really like TVS design, so I hope it doesn't go down the toilet.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So, all right, I guess we'll find... I mean, this isn't like a year for TVOS, I guess, on stage.
Well, the one thing I will say is this is a really funny time to quit as Apple embarks on its biggest effort in TV next year that it's ever had. Like, this is its biggest attempt with this all original content stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a... funny time to leave.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe we won't see like this year, but maybe next fall, maybe next spring, we'll see like who's on stage to demo Apple TV stuff, because I guess it won't be her anymore. So, all right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us. I am on Twitter at Apollozak. Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
And you can also email us with feedback at happyhour@95mac.com. And with that, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.